Stand by. Our NCLA cuts through the noise to signal abuse of administrative power. This is Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione.
Welcome back to Administrative Static. Vec, well, I think you're getting us started this morning, right?
We had a Supreme Court case that went off from our friends arguing at PLF, Cedar Point Nursery versus Hasid. And it's an interesting case in that California has, for 40 years or more, required that owners of property allow union organizers to come on the property for 120 hours a year for at least 3 hours at a time, or no more than 3 hours at a time. And the issue in that case is whether or not that's a taking under the law. And under the Constitution, if the government takes your property, you're entitled to compensation. So in this case, the question is whether that is a taking. And the reason it is such a big deal for administrative law is that there are a host of laws, particularly state laws, that allow the government to go on your property for reasons that don't require a warrant, to inspect if you're a business, whether you're following health and safety laws, whether or not you are complying with certain employment laws. There's a whole host of matters that that the government's allowed to come on your property for. So the real question in this case is whether or not this is one of those things or if it's separate. And so the government said that this is like Penn Central. And Penn Central was an interesting case when Grand Central Station wanted to make more money. Penn Central did. They were going to – their air rights over Grand Central, if any of you have ever been there, they wanted to build something there and have office buildings, and there was a preservation law in New York that prevented them from doing it. And then, this is shorthand for it. But the question was whether that was a taking that had to be compensated for. And there, it was a complicated case, but the answer was no. And Penn Central went bankrupt, and the MTA eventually redid the whole thing, is what happened. And so this case, is it Penn Central or is it something else? Because if the government floods your land, that's a taking. So if they
put a dam in place or something like that.
The Supreme Court has said that's a taking. So here are the union organizers like cutting off your air rights, or are they like a flood? And the argument didn't really go well for the government. And I think that something is going to happen, and California is going to be cut back a little bit. Justice Barrett asked the question, well, what if my house is on the corner of two streets? And if people want to protest, or make a demonstration, it's a good place, it's a safe place to make that demonstration. Could California allow them to come on my property to protest? And I think that was a good question, and I don't think it's a question that really is going to help the government. So we will see what happens there. But it's been a very long-standing law, and it hasn't been challenged till recently. And the Pacific Legal Foundation got it up there, and they did a nice job, and it looks like it'll be pretty good. But Mark, we also had another case at NCLA this week. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. So unfortunately, the results in this case are not as happy as
we had the question there was whether the IRS could ask the client for information regarding Bitcoin. And bitcoins are sort of computer generated money of some sort. But the real issue there is without a warrant, can the IRS come check it out? And our case was dismissed. The IRS has a lot of protections because the government wants to be able to collect money. So for that reason, there's a whole host of reasons why the IRS gets to do various things that other organizations don't get to do. So Mark, please tell us about Harper.
Sure. So, just as you were saying, the situation with Harper is that the judge, and this is in the District of New Hampshire, dismissed the case. And what happened with our client is that, he owned Bitcoin. He had it with several different Bitcoin brokers, and the IRS suspected, and we've talked about this case before, Vec, but the IRS suspected that perhaps he hadn't paid his taxes. And they suspected that perhaps 10,000 other people had not paid their taxes. So I want to make it clear, this isn't just one person. There are 10,000 people who got a letter from the IRS saying, oh, by the way, we just gathered all of your financial records from your Bitcoin broker without your permission and without a lawful subpoena because we suspected that you might not have paid your taxes. Well, Mr. Harper did pay his taxes, as a matter of fact. And he didn't appreciate the IRS going and invading his privacy. And for those who aren't aware, the Fourth Amendment guarantees that you will be secure in your papers and effects. And the government has to have reasonable suspicion, articulatable suspicion about why it needs something. And it has to go to a judge. In other words, the executive branch on its own without judicial permission isn't supposed to go invade your privacy. It has to have a judge sign off on the fact that there is some sort of probable cause to go look at your personal, financial information in this case. And the IRS didn't do that. They didn't have particularized suspicion as regards Mr. Harper. But the finding by the district judge in New Hampshire, Vec, this is the part that's really sort of annoying. He didn't even reach the merits of the Fourth Amendment question. What he said was, you can't even bring this case because of something called the Anti-Injunction Act. Well, the Anti-Injunction Act is a law passed by Congress that is meant to protect the ability of the government to bring in revenue. And the way that the Anti-Injunction Act works is that if you want to challenge the collection of taxes in some way, you have to pay the taxes first, and then you have to challenge it on the back end. Well, Mr. Harper already paid his taxes. So the Anti-Injunction Act really should have no bearing on this case whatsoever. And I can't really figure out what the district judge was thinking, because if we were to follow the district judge's logic, that Mr. Harper can't challenge an illegal use of a lack of a warrant by the IRS, that would mean that under no circumstances would you really be able to challenge what the IRS was doing. Because, like I say, he's already paid his taxes. This challenge wasn't a challenge to the government's ability to collect taxes. It was a challenge to the government's ability to go and take personal financial information without a warrant. That's a very that doesn't have anything to do with the tax situation. And as I say, the taxes are already paid. So there's nothing about this case that will frustrate the government's collection of current taxes. And there's nothing to suggest it would frustrate their collection of future taxes, because he's paid his taxes. And so the idea that the government needs to be able to violate your Fourth Amendment rights in order to fulfill the tax laws is just an obnoxious and noxious reading of Fourth Amendment case law, and I think is inconsistent with the precedent around the Anti-Injunction Act. So we're looking forward to appealing this case. The District of New Hampshire, I believe, feeds up to the First Circuit Court of Appeals. So we'll have to appeal this issue up to the Court of Appeals and see if we can get a ruling on this Anti-Injunction Act fact. But I just it's one of the problems with defending constitutional rights, and we've seen this, Vec, over and over again, is that judges really don't want to, and jump in here, Vec, I know you know examples of this too. Judges don't want to decide these constitutional questions. They would rather kick things out on, like here at the motion to dismiss level, by saying, oh, you know, the Anti-Injunction Act means that we can't decide this constitutional question, or you know, there's a standing problem over here. They do everything in their power to try to avoid addressing the constitutional question.
And in fact, there's a doctrine, you know, constitutional avoidance. And I understand the reason for the doctrine, but the Anti-Injunction Act has really been broadened for the reasons you just state, well beyond what it was put in for. It was put in so that people couldn't delay money getting to the Treasury. And yet it's been expanded, like here, so many times for things that would not delay money getting to the Treasury. It's just really bad.
Yeah, that's exactly right. If he hadn't paid his taxes yet, and he were bringing this lawsuit as a way of delaying the payment of his taxes, we're saying, oh, you know, you don't have a right to see my financial information, and I'm not going to tell you whether I've paid my taxes or not. But you know, you don't get to see these records until the end of the lawsuit, something like that. Then you could understand why the Anti-Injunction Act would have application here. But that's not the facts of this case. Mr. Harper has already paid his taxes. But one of the things the judge said, Vec, was that, well, it's possible that these records that the government got will show that he didn't pay all the taxes that he's supposed to pay. Oh, so that's the standard now? If it's possible that the illegal records that the government obtained without a warrant happen to show that there's some, even though they didn't have any articulable suspicion on the front end, the results of their fishing expedition might show that somebody might have possibly not done 100% of what they were supposed to do, then it's okay to violate your Fourth Amendment rights. Is that really what we've come to, Vec? You know, I hope not. That's a grotesque view of the Fourth Amendment, and not one that the IRS should be propounding in federal court, and certainly not one that our federal district judges should be propounding. So I hope that this view of the Anti-Injunction Act is overturned swiftly on appeal at the First Circuit. But we'll see. We'll keep you posted. All right. Well, welcome back. We've got the IRS item off of my chest. But Vec, there's another item this week that folks may or may not have seen involving the Department of Transportation. And this is, of course, the new Secretary of Transportation. It's no longer Mrs. Mitch McConnell, Elaine Chao. It is now Pete Buttigieg, the failed presidential candidate from the last primaries go around here on the Democrat side of things, and the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. You know, he's had a fairly meteoric rise from mayor of South Bend, where apparently they had trouble fixing the potholes to such an extent that Domino's Pizza had to come in and fix some potholes in South Bend, Indiana. I don't know if you heard about that, but what
topping did they use?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that, but
did they do it in 30 minutes or less, and did they get it for free if it was late? I don't know.
Well, I know. I think I'm pretty sure that they paid for it, so I think it might have been free. But in any event, you know, I guess that's the new qualification to be Secretary of Transportation, is to fail to fill potholes as a big city mayor. So, or I don't even know about big city. South Bend's not that big. You can walk across it pretty quickly. And I know this because you know, my wife went to St. Mary's in South Bend, so we have been up there. We know the area. But in any event, the new Secretary of Transportation has decided to do something, I think, outrageous, and I think our listeners will also think this is outrageous. In fact, during the last administration, the Department of Transportation was one of the leaders in restoring due process rights for folks who are involved in enforcement proceedings and investigations. And so one of the things that they put in place was, for example, if the department had decided that it wasn't going to bring charges against you, you know, it had done an investigation and it had decided, you know what, there's nothing here, then they passed a regulation saying, you know what, if that happens, you need to tell the target of the investigation that you're not doing anything and you have to end the investigation. Now, that might sound obvious, but Vec, you and I both know that one of the favorite tools and tactics of the administrative state is to keep these investigations open, keep the sword of Damocles hanging over people's heads, and sometimes try to leverage that into a settlement or a concession, even though the agency has found nothing wrong that the person has done that would justify an enforcement action.
There's not so only I thought that was there's not yeah, only that. There's just the plain laziness that they don't want to get around to doing what they have to do administratively to close something, but it's a constant worry for the person who's the target, even though they're not doing anything.
Well, and we saw that with Michael Flynn, too. I mean, we talked about that at length on earlier podcasts, but you know, that was the FBI in that case had kept open an investigation after already deciding that it had no basis to keep the investigation open. And that led to all sorts of mayhem. So it's a problem when you leave these investigations open unnecessarily. But the other and there were, by the way, many different facets of this protection for due process rights. In fact, the general counsel at the Department of Transportation was a guy named Jeffrey Rosen, and people might recognize that name because he was the acting general or the acting attorney general at the end of the Trump administration. So he went from the general counsel at DOT to be the deputy attorney general of the United States. And then when Bill Barr stepped down in December, Jeffrey Rosen became the acting attorney general of the United States. So he knows what he's talking about. And by the way, before that, he was the general counsel at the Office of Management and Budget, if memory serves. So he's very aware of these sorts of due process issues and the kinds of regulatory things that can happen if you don't give people all of the rights that they should have. And he, when he was at the Department of Transportation, he and Stephen Bradbury, one of his deputies, led this effort to put together a series. And I should give Secretary Chao credit for this, too, because obviously this happened all under her leadership. They put in a series of measures to help people out and to have a fair process in these enforcement proceedings. One of the things that they did, Vec, which I think is sort of shocking that this doesn't already happen, but they put in a rule that said if the government has exculpatory evidence, then it has to turn it over and share it with you. Now,
that's an exculpatory evidence. Why don't
go ahead? Go ahead.
It's so exculpatory evidence is when the government's prosecuting you, particularly in a criminal matter, they often have information you don't have that would undermine their case. For instance, somebody says, "I shot the guy. I was there and I shot him. I feel so guilty that it was me and this guy's being prosecuted." Well, if the government goes and prosecutes you and doesn't give your lawyer the statement that somebody else says they shot whoever you're accused of shooting, well, that whole case can be thrown out. And it should be, because the duty of the government is not just to get convictions. It's to make sure that justice is done.
Absolutely. And that should be true in the administrative enforcement context, too. There's no reason why it should obtain in criminal context, but not in these enforcement proceedings, particularly, Vec, because I mean, you and I both know that some of these criminal cases, you know, I'm not saying this shouldn't apply in criminal cases. And what we're talking about here is there's a U.S. Supreme Court case called Brady v. Maryland. And so these are called your Brady rights, this right to have this exculpatory information turned over to you in the criminal context. And so, as I started to say, you might have 6 months or a year in prison or something like that at stake in a criminal case. Well, in some of these enforcement proceedings, you can have life-altering consequences if you lose one of these enforcement proceedings. You might lose your license that allows you to practice your career. You might have a crippling financial blow from a penalty, or there might be some other sort of bar from government contracting or something like that that really just ends your business or your career, your livelihood. And so the idea that Brady rights wouldn't obtain in this context is troubling. And so, and there is no Supreme Court case yet, although I do think that there will be someday, there is no Supreme Court case yet that says that these Brady rights obtain in the enforcement context, administrative enforcement context. But the Department of Transportation didn't let that get in the way. They went ahead in December of 2019 is when this happened. The Department of Transportation put these new rules into effect. and Pete Buttigieg just repealed them. And I'd like to know from Secretary Buttigieg, why do you think it is that the government shouldn't turn over information about the innocence of people that you're pursuing with enforcement proceedings? Why is it that you think that the Department of Transportation should be able to continue enforcement proceedings or keep enforcement investigations open when you've already decided not to pursue any enforcement action against somebody as a result of that investigation? What is it that the DOT gets out of doing those things? And is there anything valid or legitimate about this? And we already know the answer to that. No, there's nothing valid or legitimate about taking away these due process rights. And it's disgusting that the Department of Transportation is doing this. And there's another disgusting thing about this. And by the way, there's about 10 or 12 different things that the Department of Transportation is taking away in terms of due process rights. But I just have highlighted two of the most consequential and important from my perspective. But one of the reasons that they give, Vec, for doing this, I don't know if you saw this.
I don't. I've forgotten the reason they said. I think it was sort of like, it'll all be fine. We don't really do bad things. That's the most I thought.
Well, so there's several reasons, and a couple of them they say, well, you know, another regulation already covers this, or they have some of those sorts of make weight kind of arguments. But one of the key arguments they make is this regulation is getting in the way of our ability to fight COVID-19, and that just gets under my skin because that has to be a lie. There is no way in which these due process rights for enforcement proceedings have anything to do with fighting COVID-19.
Well, Mark, the exculpatory evidence may be covered with COVID virus for all we know.
I see. You would be unduly risking a government agent if they had to turn over this exculpatory evidence that's buried under the virus pile. Okay, I see. So that logic escapes me as to why they feel like they need to take away due process rights from Americans. And by the way, you may wonder, well, what are the consequences of doing this? Well, one of the cases, we haven't brought any cases in this area yet, but we might. We're looking. One of the people I'm aware of in this space is someone who tests. I don't want to give away too much information here because, as I say, this isn't public yet, but someone who does some testing under the Department of Transportation to show that certain kinds of products meet Department of Transportation requirements.
Standards.
I don't think that gives away too much. And what happens if this person's business goes away? Where do you think that testing is going to occur if not here? Well,
China.
The answer, China. You guessed it. Yeah, I didn't even need to tell you. That's exactly right. So instead of having good old American testing procedures and facilities here on American soil, if the DOT gets away with putting these small, and these are, by the way, mostly small-time players on the testing side of these testing labs are often owned. They're very kind of sort of single proprietorship types of establishments. If you put those out, then you're back to relying on Chinese government certification for things in the Department of Transportation area for different regulations. And I don't know about you, but I'd certainly be more inclined to trust the results of some of these single proprietors that the Department of Transportation has in its sights for some reason. But just to step back and think again about the Bill of Rights and all the protections that Americans are used to having, and the fact that if the Department of Justice were going after you in some sort of criminal way, or even if it were a civil proceeding, but the Department of Justice was the one leading the charge, they typically, in a criminal case, they have to. And in a civil case, typically they do turn over this exculpatory evidence. But we're not just going to see this, Vec, at the Department of Transportation. We're being told that, one of the reasons that DOT gave for doing this is adherence to the Biden executive orders. And so we're going to see this across the Biden administration, that they're going to be taking away due process rights from people in all of the various departments and agencies across the federal government.
And the thing about it is, you know, closing a case or not closing a case may seem like a small thing. I think it's a big thing. But why the government wouldn't want to tell you what it has that shows that you're innocent of what it's charging you, there's no reason for it. None at all.
It's outrageous.